Hi, my name is Jamie Delaney, and this is the second episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. Tonight, I'd like to tell you my story of how I became a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete. First of all, I grew up in Morgantown, West Virginia, which is right on the West Virginia-Pennsylvania border. There was a small town in Pennsylvania where most people had large gardens, and oftentimes people raised their own meat for food, raised their own animals for food. I spent the summer with my grandparents, and we picked berries and cherries and peaches and apples, all of which were put into a pie. Most dinners came from the garden, and nutrition was never discussed because we had plenty of food, and that was what it was all about. They were hardworking people that raised large families and provided most of which they fed them from their own gardens and farms. Both of my grandparents had diabetes. One of my grandmothers took insulin, the other took a pill. My grandfather died when he was 48 of a massive heart attack. He had smoked and worked hard in a mine. He was an Italian immigrant. My grandmother was told just to avoid sugar. Both were overweight, and both ended up dying of heart disease at a young age. I went to medical school largely because of my family history of cardiovascular disease and my interest in medicine. During the time I was in med school, statin therapy became in vogue. We treated people's cholesterol to a target of less than 250. We never talked of nutrition with the patients. We just placed them on the medication and would check their liver function test to make sure they were having no adverse effects. And really, liver abnormalities was the only one that we really knew of. We told them not to eat gravy or red meat and to try to keep their weight under control and to exercise, but gave them no real strict or good guidelines. Fast forward, I did my residency and fellowship at the University of Pittsburgh. There was no additional nutritional education other than what I'd had in medical school, and that basically was the metabolism of protein, fat, and carbohydrates. It was a large transplant center, and we even saw patients from the Amish country that came with severe coronary artery disease. I was really surprised at that at first because I thought, how could these hardworking people who raise their own food have such bad heart disease? The reason given was basically that they smoked, and we went on from there. I finished my fellowship and went back to West Virginia University to be on faculty there. At that time, my patients were largely in their 60s and 70s. There was rarely a patient in their 80s. All the patients were very sick. Most all of them had high blood pressure. They were overweight and had had bypass surgeries at a very early age. I even saw a 31-year-old female that had had a bypass for severe three-vessel disease. She smoked and ate a standard American diet. When I moved to Florida, the age population increased and people were more active, but there was still a lot of disease. To prevent heart disease in myself, given such a family history, I started running. And my first marathon was to support the American Diabetes Association, find a cure. It still never occurred to me that dietary intervention might ultimately be that cure. At that time, I recommended a Mediterranean low-fat diet to my patients. I recommended exercise to my patients, and I thought that if I walk the walk and practice what I preach, that I could help my patients also prevent heart disease. Somewhere about that time, I read Diet for a New America, just on a whim. This was by John Robbins. The thing that struck me was the factory farming and the cruelty to animals, the impact on our environment from factory farming, and of course the ill health effects from eating animal products. I was quickly taken back by the fact that dairy had such a bad influence on our health. And the countries that consumed the most dairy seemed to be the most unhealthy. Also, while running, I started listening to podcasts, and there was one podcast in particular by a girl called Megan, Vegan Running Mom. And she talked about running and being a vegan and raising a young family, plant-based. And she made several references and interviewed people that had written books on both animal cruelty and plant-based nutrition. And I got every one of those books and I read them and I was convinced that yes, that was the way to go. My family wasn't quite so convinced. They thought that was a very radical idea. And you can imagine coming from West Virginia and a family that hunted and fished and raised their own meat for food would think that this was a little bit of an insult to change the diet that they had grown up with. But nevertheless, they supported my decision for me to eat plant-based, and they would continue eating the way they did. So I tried my best to eat the plants and fruit and grains that were at dinners and try to avoid the meat. Occasionally there would be cheese, occasionally there would be the piece of fish, and my parents begged me that if I were out any place with them that I wouldn't really tell anybody that I was plant-based and just kind of eat what that was there or sneak around and try to do this quietly. You can imagine that wasn't very successful over time. I started eating more and more animal products, and it was basically back to eating the Mediterranean diet myself. Then I stumbled across the DVD Forks Over Knives, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I knew that this was the way that I had to eat for the best nutrition, both as an endurance athlete, as a person that was at risk for cardiovascular disease and diabetes, and as being a physician. I read all that I could. I took Dr. Campbell's eCornell course, and I became very convinced that this was the way I wanted to live and that the way that I wanted to educate my patients. Dr. Campbell's eCornell course, and I became very convinced that this was the way I wanted to live and that the way that I wanted to educate my patients. I'm typically an all-or-nothing person and come into things, you know, usually 100%. So I was really shocked when I started presenting this information in my office and people weren't jumping on the bandwagon to become plant-based. I tried approaches like, you have to eat this way, you can't eat any of this, and then to try to subtly present it. It takes a long time to present a plant-based diet to a patient that comes to your office that's basically looking for a way not to be in pain or a way not to be short of breath. It's hard to convince somebody on the first office visit that eating greens might be the cure as opposed to an angioplasty, most of which they've already had done two or three times. Nevertheless, I keep continuing to try to educate my patients on the merits of a plant-based diet. I keep copies of Forks Over Knives cookbook in the office. We keep copies of Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease in the office. And we try to give patients educational materials, YouTube references, and so forth. We've started a wellness program in the office where we'll have group meetings for patients to support each other once a week in a group setting. I've spoken numerous times at the local Charlotte County plant-based foodies to try to help educate the general public on the merits of a plant-based low-oil diet. Certainly, the people that come there are much more receptive because they're wanting to find out about a plant-based diet. I've had more difficulty in the hospital. I've seen patients come out of bypass and the first meal that they've been given be steak and gravy, which was ordered by their cardiothoracic surgeon to increase their protein for healing. I've argued with overweight hospital administrators to add plant-based foods to the doctor's lounge and to offer a few menu items on plant-based nutrition. They've complied with my request to some degree, but for the most part, they've not been really palatable options. That tends to give them good reason to say, see, nobody wants to eat this anyway. So most of the time, I just talk to the patients while they're in the hospital and give them the reference for Forks Over Knives and Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease and hope that they'll come to the office and I can educate them more. For the most part, the staff of the hospital's not any more healthy than the general population. Nurses are oftentimes overweight because they're not given good options to eat while they're at work. There's often candy and treats and covered dishes that are comfort foods brought to the nurses' lounge. And because they get little activity other than what they do on the floors, which is hard work, but it's certainly not cardiovascular, they tend to gain weight quickly. It seems that the South Beach low-carb diet is much more palatable to people, or at least at first, because they can lose weight quickly. Without exception, I've seen people lose weight and gain it back, and then plus more. I try to talk to anybody that will listen about how to go about a plant-based diet and how to change their meals to go-to meals. I think it's very difficult as a traditional physician, especially a cardiologist, to change to more of a wellness type practice, because we're used to taking care of sick people. People having a heart attack, people with acute chest pain, some of which have conditions that they're on the brink of death. And our job is to try to save them acutely and decrease their pain and suffering. I was told a long time ago to not do a procedure unless it's going to make the patient live longer or live better. Now I've started to question some of the procedures that we do will actually make people live longer or better. Certainly in the case of an acute myocardial infarction, a stent and angioplasty can be life-saving. Certainly in the fact of severe three-vessel disease, coronary bypass surgery can make people feel better and probably live a little bit longer. But for the most part, none of it need happen if they would change their diet. People come to the office, though, that want a quick fix. They want to be given a pill and to go on with their lifestyle and not really be bothered. And that's how traditional medicine has been practiced. People go to the doctor when they're sick and they're given a treatment and they go on about their merry way. They're not supposed to have to help. If you have a nail stuck in your foot, the doctor can take it out. If you have a wound, the doctor can sew it up. If you have an infection, you can be given an antibiotic and fix it. But the diseases of today, such as heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, and a lot of cancers, brought on about by what we eat. It's hard to convince patients that they can actually get off some of these medications, because up until the point they come into my office, they've been given diagnosis of high blood pressure, diabetes, cancers, and been given more and more medications. The only chance they have is to either get more medications or different medications, and they assume if they're not getting better, it's because the medications are no longer working. No one ever talks about that it may be what they're eating that's causing their condition to get worse. I'd like to use this podcast to educate people on the merits of a plant-based diet. I'd like to lead by example, by what I do, but I also like to interview people that have been successful in changing to a plant-based diet. I'd like to talk to endurance athletes to also share their experience on a plant-based diet and the benefits of exercise. There's two worlds that I live in. My endurance athletic world, where I see people that are fit in shape and competitive and are very positive, competing in large endurance events, trying to get better despite what age that they are in, all hoping to race well into their 80s or at least as long as they walk the face of the earth. And then there's the patient population who come in and assume that the norm is to be overweight and their joints to hurt and them to be short of breath when they walk to the mailbox. These two populations are oftentimes the same age. I wish sometimes I could get some of my patients just to show up to an endurance event just to see what it's like. Sometimes my patients will tell me that they wish they could do what I do. And I say, you can, but it's very difficult for them to believe it, because most of the people that surround them often look like they do, being overweight and short of breath to go to the mailbox and having many aches and pains and cancers. It's thought to be a norm that once you get into 50s, you start to gain weight and various cancers and diseases start to add up and your pill box starts to fill up with medication. I hope that by interviewing these two different populations, both endurance athletes and patients that have actually made the change into plant-based, we can combine the two, and that people can learn that the sky's the limit for what they can achieve, no matter what their age is. There's a doctor in California. His name is Walter Bortz, and he's written a book, The Roadmap to 100. And during this, as part of this book, he did a study on people starting to run at an older age population in the 60s, and they had no adverse effects to their running, no more joint aches, no more heart attacks, and actually they did better. And so he tells his patient population that they are too old not to run. So enough about my story of how I became plant-based and what I'm practicing. Let's go on and talk a little bit about plant-based nutrition and exactly what I'm talking about. So I begin this conversation with my patients. Let's talk about plant-based nutrition. And they say, Doc, what's plant-based nutrition? There are two approaches. There's one of what you can eat and one of what you can't eat. I prefer to talk about the what you can eat aspect of things. Any fruit is fair game. Whole fruits are the best. I try to urge people to stay away from juicing just because of the caloric density that people can get from excessive fruit juices. Any plant food is fair game. Green beans, eggplant, squash, zucchini, anything that grows in the ground. Whole grains are okay as well. I'm a little bit skeptical, and I try not to push the starches in the way of pastas and bread. I think that some people tend to overdo this. I know from my Italian background that pasta was a way to stretch a meal in a poor family household. It's also become comfort food, so that when people do eat pasta, it becomes pasta and a little bit of vegetables instead of a lot of vegetables and a little bit of pasta. So I try to educate people that if they're going to eat the pasta or the rice, to let that be more of the side dish than the main dish. Whole grains are obviously better than processed white grains such as white flour and white pastas. You do have to watch out for whole wheat pastas because sometimes they're enriched with a lot of whey protein and eggs. So I tell people to be very careful. And the reality about that is I'd rather eat the regular old white pasta than a bunch of eggs and a bunch of fillers in so-called healthy, high-protein pasta. No to dairy. Dairy is one of the worst things that we can consume. I'd like to make reference to Dr. Campbell's the China study that basically looked at the casein protein as being associated with increased rates of cancer, especially breast cancer, prostate cancer. People will often tell me, well, we don't eat very much dairy. I only have milk on my cereal. If you don't realize how much cheese is out there, especially if anybody goes out to dinner, they're always getting cheese on food. So I said you have to be very careful and have restaurants hold the cheese and avoid putting cheese in your food or buying processed foods or prepared foods that already have cheese in or on them. Eggs are a no-no. They're part of the chicken. They're very high in cholesterol. Even egg whites, egg beaters are off this nutrition plan. Then the question comes about oil. Cholesterol only comes from animal products, but plant oils can be used by the body to make cholesterol. Also, there's a fair amount of saturated fat in all plant oils. These oils, when ingested, are taken into the lining of the blood vessel walls called the endothelial cells, and they cause inflammation and dysfunction. An experiment was done with cardiology fellows where they gave them a sausage egg McMuffin and watched their brachial artery or the artery in their arm actually constrict versus dilate to a test with a blood pressure cuff. This ill effect of oils can last for several hours even in a healthy person, let alone someone that already has problems such as high blood pressure, diabetes, or vascular disease. The two words that seem to cause the greatest problem when talking about nutrition are carbohydrates and protein. Oftentimes, people will describe fruits, vegetables, and a protein, but they really don't know what that word means. Most people assume that the protein is animal products. In fact, all foods have some degree of protein. A banana has protein, an apple has protein, zucchini has protein. And it's very rare for someone that's not severely malnourished in the United States to actually be protein deficient. It's a huge fear, however. It's always funny to me that people will eat in fast food restaurants day in and day out and not worry about their nutrition. But somebody eating a plant-based diet, all of a sudden, people are extremely worried that they're not getting enough nutrients, which could be further from the truth. A plant-based diet provides plenty of protein. And in fact, your body will absorb the amino acids from plants that are used to make the protein in the amounts that they need, and it's much more healthy so that the excess is not stored as fat. If you think about it, a cow eats grass all day to provide the muscle that people that eat beef get. So the cow's eating the amino acids and you eat the cow. You just need to eliminate the middle guy, the cow, and eat the plants, and you'll be as healthy as the cow. People don't realize that fruit is a carbohydrate. Zucchini is a carbohydrate. Lettuce is a carbohydrate. It has more carbohydrates per weight than it does protein or fat. People assume that carbohydrates means bread, pasta, and white potatoes. Dr. John McDougall has written a book called The Starch Solution that quite eloquently discusses the carbohydrate issue. Societies that lived on rice or corn or other whole grains did just fine. It was when the oils and increased meats were added to the diet that the problem started. That being said, as we eat more and more processed carbohydrates, they have less and less nutrients. So white pasta or white bread does not provide near the nutrients in the form of vitamins and minerals and even amino acids that zucchini or green beans or broccoli would have. This leads me to one of the most important parts of a plant-based diet, and that is greens. Dark green leafy vegetable. Sometimes in the office, I'll ask patients all day long just to get an idea of the day, what greens did you have yesterday? Oftentimes, people don't have any, and sometimes they'll say green beans or a cucumber because it's green. When I say greens, I'm referring to green leafy vegetables such as kale, Swiss chard, beet tops, collards, mustard greens, broccoli, bok choy, cauliflower, or Brussels sprouts. These are very important. They provide omega-3 fatty acids. They also interact with the amylase in your saliva to help produce nitric oxide through the blood vessel wall. Patients that have angina that eat 3 or 4 cups of green today can actually eliminate their angina because their endothelial cells, or these lining cells of the blood vessel, can actually be repaired and produce more nitric oxide to allow them to dilate. So greens are not restricted at all. The other thing that comes up is nuts and seeds. And again, people are worried about getting their omega-3s. And nuts have become very fashionable and advertised to be a good source of omega-3s. And yes, a few walnuts are a good source of omega-3s, but you can get plenty of omega-3s through a tablespoon of flaxseed that provides some other good effects, such as ligands to prevent cancer, chia seeds in the cereal, in the form of a tablespoon. But as opposed to having a handfuls of nuts, which are very high in calories, it's better off to get your omega-3s from the green leafy vegetables and a little flaxseed and or chia seed in the morning. I think part of the fear of starting a plant-based diet is, one, the need to do or spend lots of time in the kitchen, which it really doesn't have to happen. Meals can be quite simple. Greens in the form of spinach or Swiss chard, a sweet potato, and some white beans can be a very nutritious supper, along with a side salad. Lunch can be rice and beans with some fresh salsa. Breakfast is easy, fruit, oatmeal, topped with fruit. So it doesn't have to be real extensive. Planning is the key. Plan the meals for 2 or 3 days and buy the groceries accordingly, as opposed to wait till you're hungry in the evening and try to figure out what to prepare. I often talk about substitutions for go-to meals. So if people like spaghetti and meatballs, it could be changed to spaghetti with some spinach, mushroom, and artichokes. Bean burgers are very easy to make. You can even make a hot dog out of beans and put all the toppings like you would a hot dog and have a bowl of soup. Stir fries with various greens, carrots, and other vegetables are good to put over rice, and then they can be used for lunch the next day. Okay, what about dessert? I used to have an incredible sweet tooth. As I mentioned earlier, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, who was an excellent baker, and every piece of fruit that we ever picked or had were put into a pie. There was always 2 or 3 different kinds of pies or cakes sitting around, always cookies, so I was so used to having dessert after every meal. Since I became plant-based, I have found that fruit really does satisfy me, and by incorporating fruit in for breakfast into smoothies, I have fruit after my meals at lunch, and sometimes in the evening, especially after a workout, I'll make another fruit smoothie or just have a bowl of frozen berries or a frozen banana, sometimes with a little chocolate topping, seems to do the trick. I found that my training for marathons and triathlons have been enhanced by a plant-based diet. I typically have some dates before I swim. I make a large fruit smoothie after my long runs for hydration as well as carbohydrate replacement. We carry some rice balls made with white rice and dates and raisins on the bike, oftentimes for long rides. One of my favorite post long run or long ride salads is what I call sushi in a bowl. And basically I just take the ingredients of what would be in a vegan sushi, which is typically for me carrots, a little avocado, cucumber, the rice and the nori wrap. And I cut the nori wrap up into little pieces, and I toss that all in a bowl and add a little soy sauce and wasabi. And it's a really quick salad preparation that gives me a little salt replacement after a really long, humid run or ride in Southwest Florida. I also make a big pasta bowl for after rides, where we have some quinoa pasta with peas and artichokes and peppers and tomatoes and cucumbers, with a mustard type dressing. Since being plant-based, I seem to recover a lot better after marathons, and I'm able to run the next day without much difficulty. My energy seems to come back. I'm ready for workouts in the morning during training better than I was when I was eating animal products. I also like the fact that I don't have to count calories, and I can eat till I'm content during my training and still stay lean. Well, I think that's going to about wrap it up for this week's podcast. I'd like to encourage you all to email me with questions at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. I hope to have some exciting interviews coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So please keep listening, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.